If you've been hurt by a truck, you can call Colombo Law 24/7 and we'll be there to make sure you're taken care of. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
This is the Andy Pollin Hour on Washington's new home for sports. ESPN 630, the sports capital.
All right, Tony's out today, so we got 2 hours and no guests, but a lot of interesting audio to play for you this morning and a lot of interesting stories to pick through. In 40 minutes or so, we'll talk about when the Cowboys and the then Redskins really used to matter and when they would play for it all. And 42 years ago today, they did. And it was, oh, if you're a Washington fan, a heartbreaking finish. If you're a Cowboy fan, it was a euphoric finish. And it was a game for it all. And it may have changed the direction of the franchise completely. We'll talk about that coming up in about 40, 45 minutes. Also, Marv Albert was a guest yesterday with Dan Patrick. And he went to the Reggie Miller game, but the Steph Curry game. Reggie Miller was there. Broadcasting for TNT, he was there as a fan. You know, Marv has done a gazillion games over the years, many of them, most of them NBA, but he was there as a fan in his seat, and he had some real cool thoughts on that. So we'll play some of that. Tony and Mike weigh in on the record that is now held by Curry and how long it's going to last. I tend to agree with what they say, but we'll play some of that as well. And Mike Florio, we'll get to this at 11 o'clock. He's got an explanation as to why Roger Goodell is keeping everybody in the dark about the Beth Wilkinson investigation and why they are doing everything they can not to let this get out. If there's paperwork on it, it hasn't gotten out so far, and it does not appear that they're going to let it, and it looks like what I said yesterday is going to stand up, that that Dan Snyder is going to remain the owner of the team because the bar to get rid of an owner is very high. And I saw Will Hobson yesterday on the Dan Le Batard show, and Hobson wrote the story with Liz Clark in the Post yesterday, revealing that Dan Snyder may have impeded in the investigation. And he said the bar is very high to get rid of an owner. And he cited, and I'd forgotten about this. I hadn't forgotten about what happened, but when Adam Silver took over as commissioner of the NBA, one of the first things he had to do was to banish the owner of the Clippers, Donald Sterling, saying that he would have to sell his team, and he was banned for life. Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks, said, you know, this is kind of a slippery slope here. Do we want to get involved in this and forcing owners to get rid of their teams? In this case, it's racist and warranted, but who knows what the next instance is. So, you know, it's not just like the 31 other owners can get together and say, we don't like Dan Snyder, he's got to go. It doesn't work that way. And I'll get to more on the Washington football team on the field issues, which they're now dealing with in a way that a few other teams in the NFL are. The cases are way, way up after the latest round of testing, and Washington has 18 players on the COVID list. But first this, the breaking news overnight that Urban Meyer, who we talked about the other day, possibly coming back next year with a revamped staff, fired last night by Shad Khan, the owner of the team. Why did it happen now? Adam Schefter with Scott Van Pelt last night.
Obviously, there was a lot of reporting done on Urban Meyer over the weekend. And at that point in time, I had been told specifically that Shad Khan was planning to stick with Urban Meyer. When he arrived at the owners' meetings this week, after you saw Urban Meyer walk off the field in what turned out to be his last game as the Jaguars head coach, when he had a look like he did not enjoy this job anymore. Everybody saw the video of him with Mike Vrabel. It was almost this indifferent look of somebody who was unhappy doing a job. And many coaches, they kill for the opportunity to be a head coach.
Right.
That did not look like something that Urban Meyer enjoyed doing, Scott. It looked like it was something that he just dreaded. And all the bickering and all the speculation and all the criticism where he says we're going to find the leak and we're going to fire the people who had the leaks. It was very Richard Nixonian. And I think that as Shad Khan Khan saw the events of the weekend and processed and digested all the information and thought about it. When he got to the owners' meetings, he said, we're going to do what's best for this team. And I think he hadn't decided yet. And then we get another story that the Jaguars were informed about early this morning, where he's accused of kicking Josh Lambeau, the former kicker, in practice and demeaning him with certain language. And I think ultimately, when you're on the fence and trying to make a decision about a guy, I guess I'm making the inference here, Scott, that that perhaps pushed it over the edge.
Yeah, it wasn't just a kicker. It was a kicker with an iconic NFL name, Lambeau. I don't know if he's related to Curly Lambeau, but you can't kick a kicker. You may be able to get away with kicking a dog, though the PETA people won't be happy with you. You can't kick a kicker. And that may have been the last straw for Urban Meyer. This was a statement that Chad Khan released after firing him. He says, after deliberation over many weeks and a thorough analysis of the entirety of Urban's tenure with our team, I am bitterly disappointed to arrive at the conclusion that an immediate change is imperative for everyone. I informed Urban of the change this evening. As I stated in October regarding our trust and respect was essential. Regrettably, it did not happen. And what he's referring to in October is the hanky-panky that was going on with the woman at his restaurant. Daryl Bevel will take over for the rest of the season. The team is 2-11, and they got four games left to go. There's a timeline that was put together by ESPN about the short tenure of Urban Meyer as coach of the team. He hired Chris Doyle on February the 10th. So he's just less than a month after he was hired as coach. He brings in Chris Doyle, who'd been just booted out of Iowa because of accusations of making racist statements and bullying and belittling black players. And he was asked about this. Don't worry. I got this under control. You know, I'll handle this. And the next day, the Fritz Pollard Alliance blasted the Jaguars and Meyer for hiring Doyle. Doyle resigned later in the day. Okay. Sometimes you get out of the blocks a little slow. One false step, you can kind of, you know, excuse that. Then in May, he signs Tim Tebow to play tight end. Tim Tebow not only hadn't played football in 5 years, he'd never played tight end in his life, not even in high school. He was a quarterback. Now, had he made the transition from quarterback to tight end coming out of college? Yeah, maybe he could have played that position. But now he's in his 30s. He's been playing baseball for a few years. He hadn't played any football at all. And he's coming. So Urban Meyer, after already tripping out of the gate, hiring a strength coach who had to resign a day later, brings in a sideshow, which, you know, if it works out, okay, you know, he's got a guy in his locker room who buys into his program, who likes him, who's going to spread this great culture. But the reality is, and once we saw some video of him trying to block Uyghur Vault, had to go. So that didn't work out. July 1st, NFL fines Jaguars $200,000 and Meyer $100,000 for excessive contact during a June 1st OTA. There's probably a manual on that. There's probably an assistant coach you could have checked with. Hey, can we hit this much in OTAs? Somebody would have said, no, we can't. We could get fined. And in fact, they were. They were fined. And more importantly, they had to forfeit 2 days of OTAs during the first week of the 2022 offseason. So the new coach will inherit that mess. Then on August 31st, Meyer says he and Trent Baalke, the GM, considered a player's vaccination status when determining final cuts. The NFL Players Association opened an investigation. I actually don't disagree with that. That to me makes sense, that the best ability is availability. And if you don't have vaccinated players, there's a chance you're not going to have them available, not to mention, and we may be seeing this with Montez Sweat, the Typhoid Mary effect that spreads it throughout the locker room. But anyway, that's something you do. That's not something you say. September 12th, Jaguars look unprepared and confused during a season opening 37-21 loss to Houston, regarded by many as the worst team in the league entering the year. October 2nd, 2 days after losing a Thursday night game in Cincinnati, a video of a woman dancing near Meyer's lap goes viral on social media. That could have been it, but he was fortunate in that there was a distraction not long after that with what happened with John Gruden and the Bruce Allen emails, and that gave him a little bit of smoke cover for a while. Then December 11th, the NFL Network reports that Marvin Jones Jr. had to be persuaded to return to a team facility after leaving in response to Meyer's vocal criticism of the receiving corps. NFL Network also reported that Meyer called his assistant coaches losers during a staff meeting and asked them to defend their resumes. December 12th, Jaguars lose 20-0 at Tennessee in the fourth shutout loss of the season. After the game, Meyer denied both NFL Network allegations and said anyone leaking information risks losing their jobs. And then I guess the final straw was yesterday when a story came out in the Tampa Tribune that former kicker Josh Lambeau alleged that Meyer kicked him in the leg while he was stretching in warmups before a practice during the final week of the preseason. Meyer said the characterization of me in this incident is completely inaccurate and there are eyewitnesses to refute the account. Well, I don't know if they were able to find those eyewitnesses or if they even looked, but Urban Meyer was fired. Now comes the usual Meyer question. Where's he going to go next? Will he get another opportunity? Paul Feinbaum, who covers college football for ESPN, a guest on our morning show with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max.
Not a chance. And anyone who wants to write a speculative piece today about, you know, where could Urban end up? The answer is nowhere, Max. This man is dead professionally, and he did it to himself. And, you know, you can talk about the most spectacular flame out in NFL or coaching history, but it was easily predictable. I remember sitting with you guys in January when Shad Khan hired him. I don't know how Shad Khan became a billionaire not being able to listen to common sense. He could have called any of us or anyone else with a sensibility and told him exactly what would happen. It happened a little later than I thought, although frankly, I thought it probably should have happened four or five games into it when Urban started to show his colors. And in the end, this was very predictable, and I really cannot imagine a major school. I just can't. If you're the athletic director, how do you walk down the hallway to your president and say, "Hey, I got a great idea. I think we ought to hire Urban Meyer." And the person and the man or woman goes, "Is that the guy that was at the bar with the woman? Is that the guy who allegedly kicked the player? Is that the guy who treats people like dirt? Is that the guy who barely shook hands with one of his own players after an NFL game?" Forget it.
Yeah. There's a book that came out almost 50 years ago called Meat on the Hoof. It was written by Gary Shaw, who played at the University of Texas in the 60s. And he was one of those guys who came in with hopes, and the coaching staff had hopes for him, and it turned out he wasn't a player of that level. And he writes about how they tried to run him off. And that's college football. It doesn't work that way in the pros. They're all under contract. You have 53 men on a roster. They all play. And so you can't treat them like dirt. They're employees under your watch. You're the CEO. They're not disposable like they are in college football, where they can now transfer and go where they want to go. And so if you want to get rid of them, you don't have to have a guilty conscience about making them sit out a year. They just go, and they go play someplace else. And that's the way Meyer ran his programs at Florida, and he ran it at Ohio State. I assume he did the same thing at Utah before that. And the pros are different. And over the years, many, many have found out it works that way, like Lou Holtz, who was highly regarded at North Carolina State, hired by the New York Jets, quit with a game to go with a record of 3-10. Bud Wilkinson, legendary coach at Oklahoma, I think it was a 49-game win streak, hadn't coached in 15 years, goes to coach the St. Louis Cardinals, 6-10 first year, fired second year, 3-10. Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl, but he won him with Jimmy Johnson's players. Let's not call Barry Switzer a success with the Dallas Cowboys. Steve Spurrier, not too good. Dennis Erickson, the snowman. He coached a few years in Seattle, always went 8-8. It does not work. It does not work to go directly from college football to pro football. You have to at least have some experience as an assistant. Pete Carroll was actually a pretty good coach with both the Jets and the Patriots before he had great success at USC, and it's no surprise he's had great success with the Seattle Seahawks. That's the way it works. There are now five coaches since the merger in 1970 who didn't make it out of their first season. Holtz, who quit. Bobby Petrino, who quit with a 3-10 record. Pete McCulley is a name you may not remember with the San Francisco 49ers in 1978, fired with a record of 1-8 and replaced by a fellow by the name of Bill Walsh, which worked out pretty well for the 49ers the following season. And George Allen, whose contract wasn't renewed here in Washington in 1978. He went to the Rams, and there was a mutiny of the players because of the way he ran his practices, the way he ran the team, and he was fired during the exhibition season. He didn't even make it out of the first year. But in those days, he didn't have these enormous guaranteed contracts. The thing to look at with Meyer is he may be owed up to $50 million. And perhaps Shad Khan is meeting with lawyers now to see if they can say they fired him for cause. I don't know if they'll be able to pull that off, but if they do, they'll save themselves a lot of money. Let me get to the Washington football team and all the trouble they've got with 18 players now on the COVID list, which includes a very ticklish situation at quarterback because you got Taylor Heinicke, who's got a bad knee and a bad elbow, and now Kyle Allen is on the COVID list. They lead the league in Kyle, so they have Kyle Shermer off the practice squad if necessary, but that's just one of many problems. Most of the defensive line is on the list. William Bradley King, James Smith Williams, Montez Sweat, Casey Tuhill, Jonathan Allen, Matt Ioannidis, Tim Settle, all out. I mean, who's going to play defensive line? They have two players who are reportedly unvaccinated, Kendall Fuller, so you can almost certainly count him out for Sunday's game at Philadelphia. As for Sweat, he's eligible to come off the COVID list on Saturday, but he hasn't played in a few weeks, so it's doubtful he's going to play. I mean, they're in a ticklish situation. Now, the league is talking about the idea of having asymptomatic players, if they are vaccinated, allowed to play. That could happen. This was Ron Rivera yesterday when asked about, wow, where did this come from? I thought everything was going pretty smoothly. What's happened here?
Nobody expected this variant, and I'm almost leaning towards the fact that because it's spreading so quickly around the league right now, then it's just, you know, you almost feel it's a matter of time. And I don't think anybody expected it to be like this. I mean, this is a little bit more beyond what we had anticipated. You know, I think the thought might be that, you know, guys that hadn't got vaccinated might have come down with it at some point or another. Not that it would be a crossover. Because for the most part, most of our guys, you know, are guys that were vaccinated.
And how do you prepare a team in this situation?
Well, you take every able body you have, and they're all getting opportunities to practice. They're getting opportunities in meetings and walkthroughs to make sure they're being brought up to speed on what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Well, he's also in a tough spot, too, because he's overcoming cancer, and his immune system is compromised. Now, he says he's putting on a mask, he's had his booster shot and all that, but, you know, people who are vaccinated are obviously getting COVID because of these 18 names. Most of them have been vaccinated, but they're getting it. And here was Heinicke yesterday on learning that his backup is now on the COVID list.
Well, you know, I tested yesterday and came back negative, and he tested yesterday and came back positive, so... you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, he tested positive. I've talked to him. He said he feels fine. So that's good news. But again, for me, you know, I can't control, you know, what that test says. I try to be as careful as I can and try to be available for this team on, you know, throughout the week and on Sunday. And, you know, I just try and go throughout my day every day and, we'll see what happens. But again, you know, we're all trying to be careful. We're all trying to be, you know, available throughout the week. And again, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, and again, it's not all COVID with him because he's got a bad elbow. Now, Ron Rivera said he practiced well yesterday. But, you know, that's the kind of thing. Take another shot on that. And before you know it, here's Kyle Shermer coming into his first NFL game. One more thing from Heinicke. This was from yesterday's Zoom news conference with him. Quarterbacks usually talk on Wednesday. And there was asked about the Dallas game, a look back at this. And it was essentially a what happened question. It's his answer that I want to talk about for a second. This was Heinicke yesterday asked about the Cowboy game.
They got after us. You kind of go back and look at offensively, you know, what went wrong. And it's kind of what happened in our four-game skid. Everyone took a turn, you know, whether it was, you know, me making a poor decision or there was a missed block or a holding or, you know, a wrong route or a drop ball. You know, we all just took our turn and we couldn't get the ball rolling. And it's tough to beat a good team like that, you know, when you're beating yourself. So, you know, the biggest thing for us is just to have a short, you know, short memory, come back this week and try and build on and get back to where we were. So, and that's what we're doing.
Now, if I'm Ron Rivera, I pull young Taylor Heinicke aside. Well, he's not that young. He's 28. Pull him aside, and I said, let's have a little conversation here. Here's the way it works for starting quarterbacks in the NFL. When you win, you say, we played really well. When you lose, you say, I stunk. You don't say, we all made mistakes. I know it's true. It's you know, it wasn't all Taylor Heinicke's fault that they lost to the Cowboys, but you've been playing this golly gee whiz, as Tony calls him, folk hero, sleeping on his sister's couch a year ago, just happy to be in the NFL to, well, other guys screwed up around me. Now, Robert Griffin III famously threw his teammates under the bus after a game, saying something ridiculous like, you know, when the Patriots lose, it's not just Tom Brady. You know, when the Colts lose, it's not just Peyton Manning. No, you don't do that. And it's not as egregious as it was with RG3, but it's bad. If you're the starting quarterback, you take the blame, especially if you play bad. And he was bad. He was as bad as he's played since he's been a starter. And that's part of the learning experience of taking over the position. But I would not be surprised if Ron Rivera hears that and says, Taylor, let's have a word here, because the great quarterbacks put it on them. You're not a great quarterback yet, but you're the leader of this football team, and the other guys on the team don't need to be thrown under the bus. Not thrown under the bus with the force that RG3 threw him under, but it's a bad sound. It's a bad sound to say, hey, guys miss blocks, guys drop passes. Everybody knows that. Quarterback takes the blame. Quarterback gets maybe an inordinate amount of credit, maybe an inordinate amount of blame. That's the way it works. Coming up, Deion Sanders turns the college football world upside down. We'll get to that next. It's the Andy Pollin Hour, ESPN 630. Before we get to Deion and what happened yesterday and landing the big fish at Jackson State, I got a story that I want to get Lauren's reaction to, because we've talked about Lauren and her husband, who is a college athlete. Lauren was a terrific athlete herself, and they have a relationship which kind of reminded me, and not that I know much about their relationship, let's be honest, I've never met her husband, but this caught my eye. The Green Bay Packers, as you know, had a blowout win over the Chicago Bears, and they won 45-30. And Jordan Love, the backup quarterback, was on the COVID list, so they brought Kurt Benkert off the practice squad to be the emergency quarterback if Aaron Rodgers got hurt. Now, Benkert played college football at East Carolina. He transferred to the University of Virginia in 2016, signed with the Falcons as an undrafted free agent in 2018, was waived, signed to the practice squad. Falcons waived him in February, and finally he was picked up by the Packers, and he was put on the practice squad, you know, just in case they needed an emergency quarterback. And so with Love going on the COVID list, they elevate him to the roster to play against the Bears. It's his first game in an NFL uniform. And with the game out of hand, Aaron Rodgers does him a solid. He goes up to Coach Matt LaFleur and he says, hey, you know, the guy's been in the league for 4 years and the first time he's putting on a uniform, let him take the snaps that end the game, the victory snaps where he takes a knee. So his wife, and they've been married now for 5 years, her name is Sam, and she tweets out a picture of her husband in the uniform and says, all that hard work need recovery. And I thought, that's something that you would do.
100% a tweet that I would send. Oh my gosh, spot on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was, you talk about a zinger. and when you're doing that, there's love involved in that. But I think you really have to be a sports fan to understand the love in that, don't you?
You really do. And you have to understand, like, especially when it's an, I don't even know if she played sports, but like an athlete-on-athlete relationship, mm-hmm. you are constantly busting each other.
Right.
Like, me and Michael to this day, like, the competitiveness in the household is unbelievable. So he would see that tweet and probably be like, geez, you really had to do that in front of everybody. But he would get me on the next one.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how it is.
Yeah, I know about competitive marriages. Amber Theo Harris has been on the show. She's a reporter, and she's done work for Masson, and now she's out in Los Angeles. And her husband was a minor league hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
So she's telling me they went to the park to play 21 in basketball, mm-hmm. and she beat him, and he stormed home.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, that is how it is. I've beat him in cornhole many times, and he is not a good sport about it. He cannot beat me in air hockey to this day, and I will never let him forget it. But, it, yeah, the competitiveness is unbelievable. Yeah. Our poor kids. Our future kids. Poor kids.
So the Benkerts appear to have a very solid marriage there, and well done by the wife in doing that. He followed it up by tweeting out a picture of his knee with some of the chalk from the field on it, saying, yeah, rough game here.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. All right, Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders said on Barstool, now he has his own podcast on Barstool, and he promised that there was going to be something huge on National Signing Day, that it was going to shake everything up. And in fact, he landed the number one recruit in the country, Travis Hunter, who's listed as an athlete. He plays both wide receiver and cornerback. And so the rumor mill starts running rampant. And because Deion has a job with Barstool, there's a report that Travis Hunter has a deal for $1.5 million from Barstool. That's not to say he won't get a deal, but the Clarion Ledger, which is a newspaper in Mississippi where Jackson State is located, they've checked it out and they said, no, there's no such deal in place. But you do have to believe that there's some money in this. And the other thing is that Deion understands, and he must be in his 50s by now or close to it. He understands where these kids are watching stuff. I mean, the days of kids watching SportsCenter, it's over. You know, they may pick up some highlights on their phone and they may catch it on the fly, but their eyeballs are on places like Barstool. That's what's captured the young people, and that's why he's got a show there. And that Aflac commercial, I bet he took next to nothing so he could stand next to Nick Saban. I think that was a big part of that. So Deion understands marketing. Deion understands money. When he was first drafted out of Florida State and played for the Falcons, he had this enormous chain of diamonds and silver that he wore around his neck, and it was a dollar sign. And when he played for the Yankees and the Braves, he would come to the plate and in the dirt would draw a dollar sign before he took at bat. And there were Carlton Fisk, old-time guy, old salt, playing for the White Sox. He almost came to blows with Deion over that. So the man understands cash. And I don't know if there may or may not be $1.5 million deal. I would think not in place. But there's going to be some marketing deals. And I think that had a lot to do with this. Now, earlier this morning, Deion was a guest on our morning show with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. And Max asked him, how'd you pull this off?
Well, honestly, Key, I'm straight up, man. I shoot straight. I don't lie. I don't placate. I don't promise your kids bells and whistles. I'm not going to say you're going to blow up on the NIL. No, man, you got to come in and put in work, do your job, and the rest is history. But you got to work. So I'm a straight shooter. My coaching staff did a phenomenal job on even getting it to that point so that I can come in and be me. But we just shot it straight, man. We just really ain't promised nothing that we really can't make happen. And the first time I met the kid, I said, you know, if you come here, you're playing both ways, right? I ain't say if. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, when you come here, you're playing both ways, so you got to get your butt in shape.
But that's a thing.
And
when
this kid studied
Sanders,
me, man. I mean, he's smart.
When Deion Sanders
he's smart.
Says
he
that
studied
to you.
Me. He knows my life. Say that again. I'm sorry.
Deion, I'm just saying, when Deion Sanders says that to you, anyone could relate to this. It means something different than if anyone else in the world says that to you.
Every roster is 70 to 75% African American, man. Who you think of getting these kids anyway? So the only difference in this scenario is I'm actually the head coach. I'm going to get them along with the staff, but I'm the head coach. That's the only difference. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say we flipped him. He just wanted to do what he did. He came to our homecoming game. That's the last place you want to let a recruit go to if you won't want to lose him. Come to an HBCU homecoming? Oh, my God. When he saw how we got down at Jackson State and how genuine. You know, they were in there for the pregame speech. They was in there for postgame. So they knew how we got down. Then I think Shador, my son, the quarterback, really took him around and showed him around town and everything. And the rest is history, man. But really, the mother, the stepfather, the family, we was 100 with them. We just shot it straight.
Prime, I got to ask you this. You know, as a African-American head coach, somebody with your pedigree at a HBCU, when this goes down, there's a lot of flack from the old guard about NIL and just pay him any amounts of money and all this kind of stuff just for a guy to go to a school.
We ain't got no money.
Can you just address all the stupidity out there for me, please?
A million and a half? I heard a million and a half, and I heard Dave Porter, Norman Barstool. That's the biggest lie I've ever heard. You know what that is? That means we kicked your butt, we took what was ours, and now you got to make up an excuse why. Ooh. Ain't nobody getting no million and a half. I wouldn't pay my son a million and a half NIL. How am I going to coach a guy that's making more than me?
Yeah, wait, hey, you were wrong. You know how it is, man. You just said, Prime, you beat them at their own game, so now the only way to do is try to smear. It's like a smear campaign in politics. You win,
exactly.
They lose, so exactly. Now they want to attack your credibility and your character and who you are as a football coach of a major university. I want you to tell me a little bit about Travis's ability on the football field and how he compare to some of those that you've been around in high school and everything else.
Key, this kid, you know, Jay, just like if you saw somebody, you know, dribbling and shooting and doing their thing, Key, he got that it. And he got that 1-2. You know that. He got that when it's in his hands. He's electric. When he's on in the secondary, he's aggressive, good skill set. Technique is adequate. You know, we got to tune there to fine tune it. But I can't wait to see him on grass so I can see really what he is. You know, he's both ways now and doing a superb job, and I plan on using him that way. But I can't wait to see really what he is. But when I tell you he got that it, he got that it.
No, I believe you.
He got that. When he touched that rock, when he touched that ball, you get up. He got that kind of thing.
So when you DT, Dennis Thurman is your defensive coordinator, and having you and DT teach him, did that factor into his decision to join Jackson State?
Yes, and Kevin Mathis, who played 10
That's
years
right. Kevin Mathis
in the league, which is
too.
The secondary coach. Yeah, yeah. Not only did that factor in, but this kid studied me. Like, this kid loves fishing. Like, come on, man. You from the hood, you love to fish? I got you, baby. That's my thing. It was just so many synergies that was unbelievable. And mama don't play. And I just think a lot of people approached it wrong to mama. You know, they went wrong. They went sideways. And you know, once you mess up with mom, it's a wrap.
Prime, I got to ask you, you know, a lot of people, you know, are trying to make these arguments. Well, you know, where is he going to get exposure? And I keep saying, you got most of the exposure in the world right now. I mean, I'm watching everything that you do all the time. What are the benefits to young men being a part of the exposure that you have for their own visibility and their own brands?
Well, every day, it's a camera on me right now, whether you know it or not. Every day, we're shooting a documentary. We shoot a documentary with Barstools, and that airs, I think, going into next season. We've already did year one, but the exposure is crazy. We played on television, I think, every game but one. You got to be crazy if you don't know nothing about Jackson State right now, or you hadn't seen us get down, because we're there, and the exposure is what we want it to be. Like, you got to understand, this social media is a new generation, it's a new era, that you could be exposed every day if you want, and I choose to expose our kids every darn day to put them in that realm where some CEOs is going to see them, the NFL is going to see them, somebody's going to see them and positively maybe invest in them NIL-wise so they can get to the next level.
Deion, when people talk about the greatest athlete of all time, you are certainly a candidate for that distinction because you excelled at the highest level of two different sports. Guys like that very rarely come back to coach. I'm talking about the inner sanctum, upper echelon, all-time great Hall of Fame. Maybe he's the best athlete who ever lived, guys. But you decided to come back and, like, give back to the game. Are you surprised? Have you surprised yourself with how quickly you have been able to change the college football landscape?
No, Max, I mean, this is who I am. I'm just giving you guys the opportunity to see it. This is who I've always been. I've always been to help people, help another, help a brother type of guy. And I've always been that way. I've coached youth football, traveling around the country with hundreds of kids for years. When I made the Hall of Fame, we took 6-7 buses and played 3 games on the way there. So this is who I am. The country is getting the opportunity to meet Coach Prime now. I've been Coach Prime for at least a decade and a half. But I'm thankful. I'm elated. I'm excited. Even shows like this, man, you don't understand how much you help us, because our kids want that spotlight. They need that spotlight. And the positivity that we glean from an interview like this is second to none. And it's a blessing for our kids.
Okay. I love a guy who refers to himself in the third person with a nickname. That's great. Coach Prime. Which is, you know, look, he's a marketing genius. He really is. And he's a smart guy. But here's something that you need to differentiate with here. When he talks about exposure, if you can play, the NFL will find you. They don't have any problem doing that. Case in point, Ali Marpet, who was a starting guard on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl team, was a draft pick in 2015, number 61 overall. Only 60 other players went before him. He went to Hobart. Hobart is a Division III school. And I realized this 20 years ago when I was working with Mel Kiper, when we would start doing draft preview right after the Super Bowl, and he would give me names of not only players I'd never heard of, schools I never heard of. And sure enough, they would be second pick, second round picks, third round picks. And that's the way it is. So the exposure is something different. The exposure now is for NIL. It's for marketing. And that's what this is about. And yes, the spotlight follows Coach Prime. The Aflac commercials that he's doing. The Barstool, which they watch. And this kind of thing goes back a long, long way. If you remember the start of ESPN, one of the first contracts that they signed was with Big East Basketball. And Dave Gavitt, who is a genius, he was the commissioner of the Big East. And he understood what the marriage of television and basketball meant at that time. And so he had a deal that they would televise all the Big East games. Well, the Big East games were played in the East at 7:30. On the West Coast, that was 4:30. So kids were coming home from school on the West Coast and watching Big East basketball. And so when you started looking at the rosters by the mid-80s, they were peppered with guys from all over the country, and in many cases, Western time zone cities. And was it an accident that in 1985, of the four Final Four teams, three of them were from the Big East? No, it was not. It was the famous Villanova upset of Georgetown, and St. John's was in as well. And that's what happens when you expose kids to this kind of thing. And so Deion Sanders appearing on Barstool, that's what the kids are watching. So, you know, while Nick Saban walking into this kid's living room may mean something, it means a whole lot more Deion Sanders, because he's watching him on Barstool. And they watch YouTube, and they watch Deion dancing in the end zone. And so here you've got a top college player, and he comes to Deion Sanders, and Deion Sanders says, let Coach Prime take care of you. Coach Prime is going to teach you how to not only play, but Coach Prime is going to teach you how to be rich. And we're going to get some marketing deals. Maybe we'll get it done with Barstool. This, just because this report now has been debunked that he has a deal in place, doesn't mean he won't have a deal in place at some point. And it's all going to work out for you and your family. And you heard him say there in the conversation with the morning show, he's going to play both ways. You think if he goes to, and he was committed to go to Florida State, goes to Florida State or Auburn, which was also a possibility, or Georgia, you think they're going to let him play both ways? No, no, no. They got All-American receivers. They got All-American defensive backs. But if you go to a place like Jackson State, he's the best player at either of those positions. And Coach Prime will tell you that when Michael Irvin was suspended, he played both ways for the Dallas Cowboys. So that's the way it works these days. And Deion Sanders, congratulations to him for getting on board with this early. I think he scouted it out. He understood it. He knew where college football was going. And this is what's – now, the other thing is the kid may decide that he doesn't like to be the biggest fish in the small pond, and he may play a year at Jackson State. And maybe he transfers to – well, he may do what Coach Prime did when he was playing. You know, he played for the – first he played for the San Francisco – well, he played for the Falcons. And then he decided he wanted to get to a good team, so he went to the 49ers. The 49ers won a Super Bowl. And then he looked at the Cowboys. He said, I like to go there. It's a bigger deal to be a big deal in Dallas. And he got himself there. And he may do the same thing with this kid. The kid may look around after he has a great year at Jackson State and said, who do I want to help win a national title? I'm not going to win a national title at Jackson State, but I could win that at Georgia. I could win that at Alabama. And I'm going to go there for a year or two. And then go play in the NFL and make a lot of money. That's just the way it works. And it's funny to hear Dabo Swinney say yesterday on the Paul Feinbaum show, he said, it's chaos right now. Tampering galore. Athletic manipulating of young adults manipulating young men. Education is the last thing right now. I think it's been that way for a while. It's now out in the open. That's just that's the way of the world. Coming up, 42 years ago today, a crushing Washington defeat at Dallas. We'll talk about that as we continue. It's the Andy Pollin Hour, ESPN 630. In for Tony as well today, and at 11 o'clock, we'll take a further look at Dan Snyder. I pulled up a story from 19 years ago with some quotes from Snyder when he actually talked to the media. And it's really, really fascinating to look back on these quotes and look at them through the prism of history as to where we are now. Speaking of history, it was 42 years ago today that one of the epic Cowboy then Redskin games was played. And it was shows you how the schedule has changed, too. This was week 16 of the NFL season. They didn't have a bye week in those days, and the season started on Labor Day, so it's wrapping up in mid-December. You know, you get the playoffs going right around Christmas, and here we are, Cowboys, Redskins, and it's a winner-take-all. The reason it's a winner-take-all, this is really bizarre. They had only one wild card in those days, so in order for Washington to make the playoffs, they could lose this game to the Cowboys, but they needed the Bears to win by less than 33 points. The Bears had not scored 33 points all year. The Bears in the early window, the 1 o'clock window, they didn't call it that then, but among the 1 o'clock games, the Bears went out and beat the Cardinals, the then St. Louis Cardinals, 42-6. So they needed to win by 33 or less. They won by 36, which meant that it was a winner-take-all between Washington and Dallas. The Cowboys could actually lose the game and be a wild card, but Washington, it was either they were going to win and be division champions or they were going to lose and be out of the playoffs. And the game gets off to a great start. Cowboys turning the ball over. Washington's up 17-0. So game moves on, and it's Roger Staubach playing his last regular season game, and he's still Roger Staubach. 10 seconds left in the half. He throws a touchdown pass to Preston Pearson that goes 26 yards. Washington's lead is now 17-14 at the break. First possession of the third quarter, Dallas goes up on a touchdown from Robert Newhouse, but Mark Moseley kicked a 24-yard field goal, and then John Riggins scored on a one-yard run, and he scored on the longest run of his NFL career, 66 yards. Riggo was famous for not spiking the ball. And after he scored on that 66-yard run, it put Washington up by 13 points, 34-21, and he threw the ball in the air. That was his only touchdown celebration of his career because finally he thought, we're going to the playoffs, we're a good team, we have a chance to win the Super Bowl. Clock gets down to 4 minutes. Randy White recovers a fumble by Clarence Harmon. Dallas then comes alive as Staubach connects on three straight passes, 14 yards to Butch Johnson, 19 yards to Tony Hill, and 26 yards at a touchdown pass to Ron Springs. Washington can still run out the clock because they are still in control of this game, 34-28. But on a crucial third and two at the 32, John Riggins dropped for a two-yard loss by Larry Cole. Washington forced to punt. Cowboys took over at their 25-yard line with a minute 46 to play and two timeouts. Roger Staubach does his thing, takes the team down the field, and with the clock under a minute, Roger Staubach does this.
Staubach lines up under center this time with Springs and Pearson behind him. He throws. Washington still has two timeouts left.
Big point by Pat Summerall. 39 seconds to go, but there's two timeouts left. And Washington can kick a field goal with Mark Moseley, who does still have a big leg. He has not yet been named MVP of the league. That happens a few years later. But he's considered to be one of the better kickers in the league. And they have the two timeouts and the opportunity to set up the winning field goal. They get the ball, 5 seconds to go, and you'll hear Joe Theismann complete a pass to Don Warren with time on the clock and a timeout, but here's what happened.
Moseley with his wild bunch towel tucked into his pants. Theismann is his holder. Theismann is his leader, and he's the quarterback at the moment.
Moseley has made a field goal from the 53-yard line.
That's his longest of this year. Theismann. Throws. He's got at the 41. Game is over. Game is over. They used the 5 seconds. The game is over. A completed pass. Wait a minute. The scoreboard clock says the game is over. It may not be. They may have 1 second left to play.
There are a lot of people down walking around on the field that are not players.
Still goes on. The scoreboard clock showed that the game was over, and it is. Dallas 35, Washington 34.
Now, no instant replay in those days. Clearly, they were calling timeout with a second left on the clock. It would have set up a 59-yard field goal attempt for Mark Moseley, who to this day swears he would have made it. But they never got the opportunity to get it off. Theismann, I'm sure if you talk to him today, he'll say, yes, I was trying to convince the referees that there was time on the clock, but he couldn't do it. And they declared the game over. The Cowboys win 35-34. Washington doesn't make the playoffs at 10-6. Now, here's why this game may have ultimately been helpful for the organization. The following year, John Riggins comes to training camp, and he's still distraught about losing this game, that this was, he thought, his great opportunity to get to the Super Bowl. He gets into a spat about his contract, walks out of camp, sits out the year. The team finished 6-10. Jack Pardee got fired. Jack Pardee, who had only been on the job for 3 years and almost got the team to the playoffs the year before, is fired. And they bring in a guy named Joe Jackson Gibbs, and the rest is history. Washington wins that game. If they go deep in the playoffs, I don't know if Riggins sits out the following year. I don't know if Pardee gets fired. I don't know if Gibbs ever shows up. And Gibbs probably would have gotten a shot someplace else. And who knows? So while it was a crushing loss that day 42 years ago, many of us went to bed sick. Ultimately, it may have been a long-term win for the Washington football team. Ugh, memories. Coming up, we'll get to more on Dan Snyder and what the commissioner said about the report in the Washington Post that he may have interfered with the investigation done by Beth Wilkinson's team. We'll get to that and more as we continue. Tony Kornheiser Show next.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.